Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Nathan Totten, and today I'm joined by Nick Harris
and
Wenming Yi.
Thank you.
Perfect. So we've got a very exciting show today. We're all pumped up and ready to go. So we should cover the news probably first.
Yeah,
let's do
that. Unless you have anything to share or add in the beginning.
I will talk about the news here today.
You will, all right.
All right.
So let's. We've got a number of announcements. I guess we're using your computer. A lot of cool posts, I think, was a couple days ago. So new Mercurial and Dropbox deployment to Windows Azure websites, which, again, is pretty cool. Just added to the existing deployment options of Git, GitHub, CodePlex, TFS, and FTP.
And Bitbucket.
And Bitbucket. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Bitbucket is Mercurial. I think they do Mercurial, and do they do Git also? I think both.
I thought they did.
But basically we do. So there's the protocol support, and then there's also the web, the actual provider support. But yeah, Dropbox I think is pretty cool. It's a really easy way to keep your website updated. So you could do like one thing that I think would be pretty cool is like if you have static content, just if you want to put some HTML pages or you know share some like files or whatever, like it's a super easy way to deploy that. So yeah. So that's websites and
let's go back up to the top.
I went completely out of order.
So this week we released HTML client for your HTML5.js applications. So simply it is a script reference which you can add in, and then from that you can make use of all the sort of cool things that mobile services client provide native apps today. So you know, a structured storage data store for your back end, nice CRUD operations that allow you to simply insert that data. There's also login support there, so if you want to have your HTML5.js app utilizing Twitter, Microsoft account, Facebook, Google, you can do that using that as
And
well.
this is like you're talking basically browser HTML, JS, because we previously supported Windows store apps using HTML and JavaScript.
Right.
And they added, to enable this, they actually added the cross-origin request sharing cores.
Resource sharing.
Or resource sharing header. So basically what that, it allows... I guess it's
cross-domain.
Yeah, cross-domain requests on most browsers. Do you know if they support, like, I think maybe
There's
older
browsers
don't.
Here. There you go.
If older browsers don't support
so
cores, does it work or does it not work?
IE8 browsers, current versions of Chrome, Firefox, Safari, plus PhoneGap.
And do they fall back to JSONP then or just doesn't work?
I haven't actually had a chance to play with
okay.
it. I'll be doing that tomorrow.
Cool. But pretty much any reasonably modern browser. Mm-hmm. So, cool. And then the last thing is why we've brought Wenming on the show.
No, we've got one more here.
Oh, geez.
This one's sort of cool. So there's some screenshots. There's a view of the default quick start. If we come down, this is where you go and add your custom domains for cores. And the cool thing which I wanted to show here was, I think I hit a back button. Let's click in.
No worries.
What is this magic on your keyboard, Wenming?
Think it's just this. A normal keyboard.
So PCL support for mobile services. So we've released a preview on NuGet of the mobile services client library.
This is portable class library.
Library. So now you can use that for your Windows Phone apps, Windows Phone 7.5, which a lot of people have asked for support for.
Yep.
So that's now supported through this preview package. And you can also utilize it, say, in your server-side .NET backend for whatever you may be building.
Cool.
So it certainly opens up a lot of opportunities.
And even,
there as
I mean,
well.
That like Windows Forms, apps, like WPF forms, apps, WPF. Anything really you want to do.
ASP.NET MVC.
Even Silverlight, whatever. Probably. I think portable class supports across the board, basically everything. So
that's it.
Cool. So is there a separate Windows Phone 7 library, or is it the portable class library?
It's a portable class library.
Okay.
And that's a preview of where we're going.
Yep.
So eventually this will replace the one that we have for, say, Windows Store apps.
Okay.
Windows Phone 8.
Which makes a lot of sense. Then you're always getting the same. I mean, it's one assembly to share.
Yep.
Always the same, for sure the same. Mm-hmm. Same API, et cetera.
So, yep.
Cool.
That's it.
All right.
Now to the bottom of the page.
To the bottem of the page. All right.
This is your stuff.
Far to the bottom.
Yeah. Oh, that's
we're
going to
read
comments.
All of
that's
the
all
comments.
The great comments that we have. So first of all, next one.
There it is.
So first of all, HD Insight is a new service that we put out. It's essentially Hadoop as a service. It's based on the Apache Hadoop distribution. So what we have going here is we made it into the Windows Azure portal, and before that we were actually a completely separate.
It was a private preview before,
right? It was a private preview. Now it's actually a public preview.
Cool.
So that works really well, and a lot of people are getting very excited. We already have, I would say, hundreds, if not thousands, of people signed up for it.
Cool.
That was announced a day or two ago.
Yeah, that's right. It was announced a day ago. And I also have some new content that are coming out with some videos and also some hands-on labs and tutorials that some of them are already up and running, and we're putting out the rest in the next couple of days.
Cool.
One of the interesting thing about it is that it allows you to spin up a really large cluster to do data processing. So, for example, if I want to do a minimum cluster, I think it takes about 14 cores. So the head node, which it controls all the rest of the machines, is 8 cores. And then you add 4 core worker roles, worker nodes that is part of the system. So essentially you have a distributed system that is doing processing on this very large data set. So here are some interesting scenarios that you can think of. One is that in the good old days in enterprises, a lot of the data or log files are just simply thrown away after you have kept them in the enterprise data warehouse. Now that storage has become really, really cheap, I think the example that I always like to give is 20 years ago, I remember I had my very first PC. It was 20 years ago. I think it was $1 a megabyte. That was not that long ago. It's like $1 a megabyte. So now you can actually get probably storage for a few pennies per gigabyte.
Cool.
So that's like a few million times cheaper, right? The other interesting thing is that we have all these social networks. So you're a fan of Twitter and Facebook. I see you post a lot. I do. And so think about it this way. There's not just simply you. There are 2 billion of us all posting to Facebook and Twitter. So how are you going to keep up all that data? So you really can't store in a single machine. So we have a distributed system to be able to store that. So the idea is that you need a distributed system to store the data, and you also need a distributed system that will be able to do the compute on it. And also, you don't want to move the data very much inside that system. To explain how that works is that it has two layers, the storage layer, which simply sits on top of many, many, many hard drives in a cluster configuration, right?
So
you have like 1,000 machines.
Okay.
It would be seen as one file system.
So these are drives mounted to like your worker roles, or are you talking about like blob storage?
So what I am actually talking about is the regular Hadoop. So we're not talking about HD Insight it's actually a slightly different configuration.
I see.
So the normal Hadoop cluster works this way. So you would put out, you know, hundreds of these machines, and you'll put them into a cluster. Essentially, what happens is each of these machines may have, 20, 30 disks. So because it's data intensive, right? So, but you can't store more than that. So then you end up having this distributed system that keeps 3 copies of the same data in a very loosely coupled manner. And then the actual MapReduce protocol, or the programming pattern, what it does is it actually takes the programming code and goes and finds out where that piece of code or piece of data is and loads it onto that machine, does the compute, and sends you back the results.
So you're moving
the compute to your data.
The compute job rather than the data. I see.
Exactly. Normally, if we do compute on a, for example, HPC or other type of simple computation, we'll be copying it. The idea is that you don't want to copy large amounts of data. So you simply want to say, okay, I want the data to stay where it is, and then I'll send the compute over to do the computation. So that's actually slightly different on the Windows Azure, Windows HD Insight service.
Okay.
The way that works is that by default, you have a file system already. In the cloud, we have compute services. We already have the storage services as well. So that's called the blob storage. Everybody knows that. So the blob storage is persistent, as you know. That's a very simple thing, but a lot of people actually don't necessarily kind of get used to it if they first come to cloud computing. So it's fundamentally different from the Hadoop, you know, original configuration. So you're actually storing data on the blob storage. And then what's also interesting is that you are, you know, you're computing over the network. But on the other hand, we have very fast storage, so it's still giving you the parallelism. So you're still using multiple machines to put data out of the data storage. And when you're done with your compute cluster, you can shut it down. So you don't even care about what's already, you know, in the hard drives on those nodes that you spun up.
So
does that make sense?
The data being processed, you're saying, is it stored and processed in blob storage, or you grab it from blob storage, pull it local, process it, drop it back?
So you're streaming it, meaning that you're reading,
bringing it in
transparently.
Okay.
Yeah, you're reading. So essentially, instead of reading from local disk, you're doing a HDFS read on the blob storage.
All right.
So it's very transparent to our developers, and you won't even see the difference.
All right.
So even if you are new to, even if you have been using Hadoop for a while, when you operate the system, it will just be completely transparent to you. When you look at what's actually in the file system, it will be pointing to the blob storage.
Right.
So it's,
does this span across multiple storage accounts?
Not at this point.
Right.
You can. You can actually, you know, get other storage accounts to be added in later. But for now, I am just simply using one storage account for now. And before you spin up a cluster, you have to first create a storage account. And then you say, you can point your cluster to it and say, all my data is going to be sitting in there. And then you can do the processing on it using parallelism. So for example, I have a four-node cluster. You have all those four nodes working very hard against the blob storage. And each of them could pull data at a, you know, their own rate, like to say 30 or 40 megabytes a second, or maybe even more, depending on the where your data center is.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, we're actually keeping all these, the entire system in the east data center.
Okay.
So you don't want to go create a storage in the west data center.
Right. Is that just, that's just because it's in preview, or will we?
That's just in preview. I mean, this is what we have currently.
So why don't you tell us, like, so it sounds like there's some differences to what a traditional Hadoop deployment would look like versus RHD Insight. So from a developer standpoint, like, what is the advantage of that? I assume this is just a service you can spin up. I don't have to worry about, like, managing, you know, deploying a bunch of virtual machines. I can just kind of say, give me this HD Insight service, run a bunch of jobs, and then shut down, right?
Pretty much. So the you're really asking about two questions. One is, how does it differ from you know, the traditional Hadoop cluster?
Mm-hmm.
So that, for most developers, you're going to not even see a difference. The HDFS layer has been completely covering that for you. So you'll just be doing everything as is. You're not going to see anything different. And the other piece is really about how the developers are going to you know, develop interesting scenarios. So, for example, there might be a lot of people that are fairly new to HD Insight that really about, you know, what is this service about and what can I use it for? That's your second question. I think the second question is kind of resuming what I was speaking earlier. The first scenario was the enterprise data warehousing, where you're keeping all this data because it's cheap. Because and also, Azure, you don't have to worry about how much data you put into blob storage because it's theoretically infinitely expanding. And you know, for most users, that's true. So you can use as much as you like. For example, I use small amounts of data. I think it grew from about 500 megabytes to about 11 terabytes over the years and over the last year or so. So I don't have to worry about buying another hard drive. So that's really a very compelling reason for people to move into the cloud. So, and also it's getting cheaper. You see that our storage account actually gets cheaper and cheaper over time. So it's not about how much it's going to cost now. It's about how much it's going to cost in the future. So it's always going to be cheaper as time, you know, goes past. And the other interesting scenario is Internet of Things. So how fast can you tweet?
I don't know.
One every minute? how fast can you be
80 words a minute.
80 words a minute. There you go. So Nate can type 80 words a minute. But devices, these, you know, automated devices, they can do a lot more. So yeah. How about your room temperature sensor? How much data does it spew every
Pushing up every 5 seconds at the moment.
Every 5 seconds. So yeah.
But if you have millions of them.
His sensor is a lot faster than you can tweet.
It is.
So if we have billions of those devices, you really need a place to store and analyze that data. So I think that is really the future of you know, where big data is going. So you really need a place where you're always up and running. Mm-hmm. So you can't go down.
So
right?
I hear today you're actually going to give us a demo of this, and you're going to try and gain some insight or answer the question of why does Nate iron his underwear?
Well, that wasn't in the plan, but we can do that for the next episode.
Right, we told you this show is very casual.
All right,
you have to prepare the demo.
All right. That would be next time. So let me kind of continue the story here. The third one is really collective intelligence, and it sounds really, really fancy, but. It's really collective intelligence and predictive analysis. What collective intelligence means is fairly simple. It's because we're centralizing a lot of the human behaviors in one place. So for example, social networks and all the stuff that you buy online. So, you know, when you buy stuff online or Netflix, right? Very simple. Mm-hmm. So we want to be able to use that data that we normally wouldn't have, right? So that also applies to interesting things like you're building a service. So, for example, we have an Azure service, or I actually have a weather service, as you know. So I collect a lot of data myself.
Weatherman.
Yeah, the weatherman. So the interesting thing about it is that I can see what is happening with the service and use that information to improve my service as it goes. For example, people do things on there that I may see as a feature request without actually having to talk to a customer because the data is actually there. So you can use that data feedback loop to really improve your services. So that is the power of data. And also, since everything is in the cloud, HD Insight is a perfect place where you can do the processing. So storing data, people have figured that out really relatively easily. But machine learning and also predictive analysis, doing the analysis on these huge amounts of data, that is going to be much more challenging going forward, and people are really spending a lot of resources on that type of work right now.
Let's see it.
So the first thing is that you log into the Windows Azure portal, and for those of us who are lucky, we already have have the service in our account. But normally, for most people, it will be disabled. And then you go to the Preview Features page.
There'll be a link.
If you go to Previews Feature. The first thing you have to do is you just go to Quick Create, and you type in your cluster name, your password, and that's pretty much all you need. But before I actually do that, what was the thing that I forgot that I mentioned earlier? What would I have to do first?
No.
I have to go create a storage account. So you store your data first. So I have to go back and create a storage account first. Okay. And that's pretty straightforward. I can go ahead and do that and make sure that you're actually doing this in the East data center. Otherwise, you're pulling data from across the continent. Yep. That's not going to be very fast. So
it's
create your storage first.
Egress
And then do your HD Insight cluster. And it's really simple. And I don't think I need to demonstrate that. Just simply type in your name. The name of your cluster, and then pick however many you need. I would pick 4 because it gets very expensive very quickly. So once you create the cluster, you essentially takes about 20 minutes or less than 20 minutes, 10 minutes or so, and then you are ready to log in. So for example, I already have one here, and that is. Called the My Cluster. I actually got the domain today. That's my favorite. So if you click on it, and it allows you to log in into the actual cluster. So normally, if you log in for the first time, you have to type in a login name and a password. So here, this is your Hadoop cluster. So it has 4 nodes, and the way I would know is to go to the monitoring cluster. A tool. So, and it shows you, what has been happening in the last 30 minutes. Obviously, nothing. We've been talking. Yeah. But if I, move it out to an hour,
you see
there's
this has been not not very exciting for
no,
you?
No, it's very exciting. Thank
why,
you.
Why hasn't your computer programming been, or your map produced
well, because we were
been
talking,
monitoring right? our discussion?
And not yet, but that will that can, could, you know, it right. could be arranged, right?
All right.
So that's you know, the monitoring tool. We have four nodes. They're all very healthy. That is a good thing to know. And the name node is up. The name node keeps track of where everything is. And then there's a job tracker. Think it's a batch system where you're sending lots of work into it.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of has to figure out where things go and kind of schedule it a little bit rather than complete chaos. It's like, you know, imagining having a you know, 100 people kind of running into a room only has four mm-hmm. seats. So here's the interactive console. The interactive console is something that Microsoft has done, and it's a JavaScript. And, you know, Hadoop system lets you look at the file
so
system.
So this is in JavaScript then?
Yeah, and this is all JavaScript.
Hive?
Yeah, Hive is the SQL-like language. So you can actually run...
So you can do either.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You can do either, depending on what you're trying to do. So I'm actually not going to do...
How about Lisp?
You could do Lisp.
Really?
Yeah. If we do streaming. You can do F Sharp. You know, I've actually seen people do Python. And you could do it in Fortran if you really want to.
Those type of languages streaming. Are common for this sort of like F Sharp. Is that a...
F Sharp is a great language.
I have no idea. I've heard of it before.
Yeah. So have you heard of a programming language called Scala?
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. you have. So Scala is essentially a scripting version of Java. I mean, well, it's a scripting language that runs in the on top of Java. So F Sharp is pretty much the scripting language that sits on top of .NET languages.
Cool. So let's see the demo.
All right, so let's see a simple demo. So the first thing I want to do is...
The suspense is killing me.
So, you know... first thing we can do is we can run some Hive scripts, and they're, you know, pretty simple here. So what I did here is I asked someone for their car data as they're driving in this morning. Mm-hmm. So we actually have the data here somewhere. As you can see, they're all just in complete text files. If I just, you know, open it in Notepad++, mm-hmm. and this is not like doesn't look like a SQL database or anything, right? Mm-hmm. But if I can kind of look at it, it's semi-structured. I can see there's, you know, 0, 0, mm-hmm. 1. There's a bunch of numbers there. It's just a CSV file. That's all there is to it. So how would you be able to normally run SQL query against that?
Mm-hmm. Just store it in a...
you have to store in the database, right?
The spatial index.
Yeah, exactly. So that becomes that you have to do the ETL process yourself. But here, I don't have to do that. So the first thing I want to do is to type a command, you know, the very familiar command, show tables. So this would actually show you all the tables that are currently in the Hive system. So Hive is pretty much SQL-like languages, as we know. So if I just do... you know, show tables, you can see there's a couple of different tables. The first thing I want to do is to go ahead and drop the table that I previously had in there, which is drives. So mm-hmm. what would be the syntax?
Drop table drives.
Exactly. See, you already know Hive before I even tell you anything about it. Yeah. Drop table.
Drop table.
So you already know.
Little Bobby tables.
You already know HD Insight, right? So there's almost nothing you have to do. And 90% of the time, I would say, people would normally be using Hive for big data queries. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to find some interesting things on some raw data. So the next thing I want to do is I actually want to show you what the Hive query looks like. The difference between a SQL and this is that you are creating a table. As you can mm-hmm. see, this is the create table syntax. And what you're doing is you're creating it without actually touching the data. You're mm-hmm. not doing an ETL process. So what I can do is I just do a control copy and paste it in here to create the table. So, and once I hit evaluate, it will take no time at all for it to do that.
Several hours?
No, less than a second. It's done. It's done. So if I start doing, so right now I created a table. I can just simply starting to run select. So if I say select star from drives, limit 10, maybe. Yeah, evaluate.
Data, right?
Yeah. So there's going to be, you know, it's just going to show you data, like, right there. What I did is when
did
I created
the
table.
How did you insert the data?
How did I insert it? I didn't have to do any of that.
Okay.
I simply
where's this coming from since you just dropped the table there and then
recreated? So I recreated it. So I create a table, and there's some data there, and I said superimpose this structure on it without ever touching it. So that's the big difference there. Because you have... you're simply not really touching it at all.
Right? So this is location.
Exactly.
Wrapped.
There you go. That's where the location is. It says, okay, this is a text file.
Yeah.
Go ahead and put a structure on it with the schema.
Okay.
And I'm done. And I don't actually touch the data. I don't even know what's in there. So the next thing I can do is to run some interesting queries here. So here are some of the interesting queries. So this is engine data. So what we can do is we can say select gear and max speed. We're just going to type it as we, you know, we can talk about it. So select gear. You know, this car has more gears than we normally do. Max speed, which is the maximum speed at that gear, and also, you know, the average speed plus minimum speed, and you're just grouping it by gear. Guess how long this is going to take you?
A day.
No. A few
30,
seconds.
40
a few seconds. Yeah, so if I do a query on, you know, a few kilobytes of data here versus a few gigabyte or even terabyte, they might actually turn out to take exactly the same amount of time. Because there's overhead when you run MapReduce jobs. Mm-hmm. It has to be scheduled on each of the machines, and it has to break up, you know, parts. If you put really large files in the system, it will actually break them into smaller parts, into 256 megabyte chunks, and it's distributed without you even knowing anything about it.
Ta-da.
So, yeah, and we're done. And let's look at how this guy is driving.
So how much data, I mean, this query, like how much data were we sorting through?
This is not too
running
much,
this
I would
map reduce job.
Yeah, this is maybe a few hundred megabytes or so.
Okay.
Maybe even less.
So that wasn't that impressive because a SQL database could do that too. But this is sort of the thing that, like, you could potentially have like terabytes of that same data.
That's
right. And it would have taken probably not that much longer.
Or even petabytes of data.
And you still are talking about a job that can be completed in maybe, what, like 30 seconds
minutes.
Or a minute, a couple minutes.
Yeah, okay. A few minutes.
Depends on how many nodes you've got, right?
That's right. Also depends on how many nodes you have, what the I.O. is like. So let's take a look at this guy when he's driving. So obviously, he's over the speed limit at some of these times, and he has seven gears, apparently. And this is the average speed, this is a nice car. And then 73 miles an hour, that is a little high, isn't it? 76. So I wonder where he's actually driving.
Depends where you are.
Yeah, that's right.
If you're in Wyoming or something.
Probably
Montana,
I-90.
Probably on
I-90. So as you can see, I did this very quickly as I'm just talking to you. Normally, what would you do? You have to go write a C# program. You have to, you know, do some sorting. You have to do some, you know.
Do it all by hand.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have to do any of this because I don't have a license.
You don't have a license. That's
right.
You've
only been in this country for 2 years, folks. It's
and you still don't have a driver's license.
I'm getting there.
That's
on the
amazing.
To-do list.
It is on the to-do list. Okay. Well, so this is a really simple thing, and this is what a lot of people are doing. So when you talk about HD Insight, you have huge amounts of data, and you can run SQL query against it without having to learn any new technologies.
Mm-hmm.
So this is simple, and this is what people are doing most of the time. And most of the time, there's a Microsoft paper that says you can never get fired for buying a cluster. I think there's a paper like that. Basically, what it's saying is that for most people, I think it's about 20 gigabytes of data. Mm-hmm. You're pulling that amount for each of these queries. So as you can see, that this is a very valuable tool for you to be able to use, right? So the other interesting thing here is that I want to show you. I know this show is starting to get a little long here. So I have something called the Mahout engine. So you buy a lot of stuff online and you watch Netflix, don't you? Right. So are you guys same one?
Netflix video list.
I'm really concerned where this is going. Like, let's just pull up Nate's Amazon purchase history. Let's get his recent credit card bills. Like, what is going on, Wenbing? I see you've been buying a lot of
Redbubble.
Yeah, ridiculous amount of Redbubble.
So I actually on GitHub, I put some of these demos up if you guys want to try it. So it's GitHub/Wenbing and under Big Data Samples. You can try them yourself. They're really simple, and there's no pages of tutorial you have to read through. Just go in there and play with the data set. And then let's actually go back and talk about Mahout. So if I just simply click on here, the demo is pretty simple. You need three input files. What we're doing here, we're trying to figure out something called the user-based recommendation system. So based on what Nate likes, if you have a very similar taste or history, of purchases. And then you'll probably be...
Where is this going? All right. We're going to stop the show right there.
Okay, well, you get the idea. Yeah. So the input here I have is really about the data I got from the Million Song database. And, you know, look at these numbers. They're very simple.
Did you push that all to GitHub? I'm sure they weren't happy about that.
No, it's actually processed. It's not actually their data, so it's like processed. So what I have here is just a set of triples. What it means is that users saw and how many times they actually listened to it. Mm-hmm. So if Nate, you listen to a specific song, many. You do.
Katy Perry.
Oh boy.
The Backstreet Boys.
Yeah, Backstreet.
There you go. So we probably won't have very similar tastes, but Nick and you may.
Justin Bieber, the Beatles.
There you go. So Spa the input skills. Is pretty simple, right? So it's the data that we've captured about user, user behaviors. And then what we want to do is to basically run over it and say, hey, give us recommendations for other songs for these users based on what other users are watching.
So this
watching,
is, right? I mean, this is like what, say, Pandora or, like you said, Netflix
very similar. And what it's internally doing is it's kind of building a feature vector. Feature vector figures out, what are the things that you like. And then what they do is they figure out the distance functions. Distance meaning that how similar they are. Mm-hmm. So you can use a cosine, you can use a Euclidean, very simple math formulas to figure out, what they are. And if you're very, very similar taste, and then they'll give you a proper recommendation. So actually, I already ran this.
What are you remoted into here?
Yeah.
This is the head node?
Yeah, this is the head node. So I'm sorry, I didn't explain that. So in order to log into this head node, what you would do is to go back to the portal, and you just click on remote desktop, and then you'll get access to the head node.
Can you not run this Mahout via the interactive console? Like, is that possible?
It's not as easy because Mahout is actually a complete package. So there are commands that I'm running against it. Okay. So I logged into the actual portal. That makes it more interesting. And then what I am doing here is to basically run the command. I'm not sure if Bob can zoom in a little bit here.
Just change your font.
He can do everything.
He can do everything. Okay.
You should change the font.
Yeah,
no,
so what we can do is we should just go in here and look at the actual command. So what you're doing is that you're running Mahout as a command, and then you're going to specify it as an input file. And it's and you're going to give it a similarity preference and what kind of, there are many different types. And then you give it an input and tell it where to put the output. That's
and
pretty
we'll
much
we'll put
it.
A link to this so people can see it.
That's right. And so once I start running this, it's going to take a long time because think about it, there's a lot of similarity you have to actually compute. So what I did instead is I can show you where the output looks like. So in order to access the HDFS, you type Hadoop DFS-LS. So this tells you where it shows you what's actually in the file system. So it's not your local machine file system. It's actually in a distributed file system. You have to use a special tool to access it. So if I do user output, it's essentially giving you the actual results. User, I have to type admin. You can also do cat, meaning that you're just, catting the actual file. So here's the output file that you can actually see it better from here. So I do have it in there. So what we can, for the sake of time. So what this is telling me is that for user number one, for song number 95, you may like it at the scale of 4.7.
It's so Biebs.
So
the Biebs.
So and it will be able to do it a lot better than generally what I can recommend songs to you. So so because the system basically looks at all the users and what they've looked at, how many songs they've downloaded. It's a behavior. You can't really you can't really model behaviors with a model. Instead, your data is always going to be better than a model. So what you we're showing here is that for number user number 12, he really is gonna like song number 1819.
That would be me with Spice Girls.
Yeah, that would be you. So if I replace them with actually song titles,
Scary Spice. Which one's your favorite? Didn't they have names?
So if I actually have all the
don't worry, no one's watching the show anymore at this point.
Oh, okay.
The ratings dropped. Okay.
All right.
It's literally just us, and Bob has to watch it when he does the editing. No, I'm just kidding.
All right.
Some people there, man. No,
I know people are going to watch. People I have watch. Some fans out there. I know
you
that.
Have some fans.
There you go.
Excellent.
So I think that's kind of, you know, okay. sums it up, right? So, and the last thing I want to actually show is perhaps using Excel. Excel to be able to pull data out of the system. So I'm going to do it really, really quick. What I'm going to do is to click on the data panel, and we actually mm-hmm. have a Hive panel.
Where do you get right? this?
So it's actually really easy to get it. You just get it from the same place you always get it, which is download from that site. And once you install it, you're going to be able to look at all your data. So I'm going to do it really, really quick. And look, you know, there's the drive, right? As you can see, there's the data that I got here. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty quick, and I can, you know, go plot something, and I can go to insert, you know, maybe what do I want here? Maybe a little chart here. Maybe that.
Fancy.
Well, it's not really the best data to plot, but you get the point. You can plot pretty much anything you want.
The next episode will be about drawing charts in Excel.
Well, sure. Yeah, well, it's all about self-service BI and you know, interesting things you can actually do.
So my one question is, so you've shown us kind of like how to execute queries like in the browser, in this terminal, connecting with your Mahout thing with Excel. API to do this all programmatically, correct? Like from your application. So is there, like if I'm writing, say, an MVC web app or a Node.js web app, how do I integrate the data from this into that application to, expose it to the users?
That's a really good question. So first of all, you will be able to, all your data is already stored in blob storage, so you can program it that way, right?
Oh, okay.
So that's easy. And the second way you can do this is that we will actually, we do actually have a REST interface, which you can interact with the cluster and be able to pull data out. Mm. And then we also have the ODBC driver, right? So you can use the ODBC driver to actually load the data out. Yep. I mean, that would actually be very interesting.
Cool.
So there's a lot of ways you can do this.
This REST API as well, you can utilize that to schedule jobs and those types of things as well.
Yeah. So this is how
you
interact
with it.
If you
want to script that from you know, local here,
if you want
to
just
do that.
Yeah. Cool. So that's kind of
security wise how it locks that down. Like what do you use to authenticate?
Given that he has access to my credit card,
we have passwords. It's as secure as Azure is, right? So it's essentially, you know, machine passwords, and I always have a good password.
Right. Gotcha.
I think there's probably already somebody hacking my machine map by now. He uses the default password.
Just password?
No, it's
admin
not.
Admin and password?
Not that bad. All right. So anything
that's
else?
I use for my bank account.
I think that's pretty
is
cool.
That
it looks like there's a samples tab there for people if they want to use them.
Yeah, exactly. So if you want to look at samples, there's a lot of, you know, five samples you can try out. My favorite is probably going to be the gray sort. So you can essentially run a long job. And as you can see, if I look at, you know, the job histories, and there's going to be some of them that worked out. And, you know, as you can see, when we ran the Hive script, it actually turned into a MapReduce, you know, a series of MapReduce jobs, as you can see. There's, you know, MapReduce, you know, how long things took and how much the CPU is. So it does that for you. You don't have to write your own MapReduce code. So that's the nice thing about Hive, which is what most people are going to be using.
Cool.
Very cool.
Any
other
questions?
Can you run a Stack Overflow sort on it? Did you see? We're going to put a link to that at the bottom of the show because it amused me quite a lot.
All right. I'm glad you
found it. You know
what I'm talking about.
This is on Hacker News a couple of days ago. It's a sorting algorithm that goes and searches Stack Overflow for JavaScript sorting algorithms and then just does an eval on them.
Oh, that's pretty interesting.
It's actually quite hilarious and awesome.
All right, so I think that's, you know, my simple introduction to HT Insight. So I want to remind people that it's really about being able to store large amounts of data, that's for one, and be able to run analytics on it. And then on top of that, you want to do self-service BI so that information workers, people who are not necessarily data scientists, would be able to access the Hadoop resources.
Cool.
So that's pretty much the story.
And what about, so this is in preview, is it free or what's the cost of it?
I would love to have it to be free for you, but it is a lot of resources when you talk about, you know, large amounts.
So is there? So you're just paying for the core. It's this
so it's like all the other.
But you're basically paying for the cores and the storage.
And
is
the
there?
Storage, yeah.
There's not actually a fee, like another fee for.
No, there is not another fee.
At least
as far as I know.
Maybe it'll come. I don't know.
And this is
and you'll just give your credit card info to anyone who wants.
Or his login is sufficient.
It's admin and password. So Wenming's credit card number?
Yeah, I could definitely give out my credit card. Yeah, it would just
all right.
Let's do that.
So you can Wenming if you'd like his credit card number.
You can get a free cluster that way. Do some processing.
Okay. I think that's frowned upon.
All right.
Maybe so, one day we'll be able to answer the question posed about Nate.
About my underwear, why I iron it.
I don't even own
an iron, actually.
Okay. Do
you own an iron?
I do. Actually, I do. I even know how to use it.
You don't know how to use it?
I do.
Okay.
Look at this shirt. It's immaculate.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I didn't have to do any work.
Okay.
So you just have to buy
new ones and throw them out.
Have it delivered to you every 3 months.
Have an iron delivered or a shirt?
A shirt.
And just wear it for 3 months?
3 months is just
I don't know about that. It will probably be non-ironable by then. This is a really long show then.
That's all right. Bob's going to edit it down to 3 or 4 minutes. No.
All right. Fantastic.
All right. Thank you for joining us, everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for showing us that. Looks like some powerful stuff.
Yeah. And you guys can follow me on Twitter if you want to.
What's your Twitter account?
Wenming.
Let's do this, Wenming.
Yeah. Magic.
Yeah, right. Exactly. We'll do the magic.
So follow you on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter. And also like us on Facebook. We're up to, I believe, 78 likes, which is... makes me happy. I sit there every day and I wait for that second or that next like, and it
never comes.
I'm completely terrified what this show is going to look like.
Oh yeah, like us on or follow us on CloudCover at CloudCover Show.
Yeah.
Tweet complaints, etc. After watching this entire episode, I'm sure there'll be many.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks for having
me. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's enough. All right.